Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for the reply and for the opportunity to present here today. I am Kevin Thiessen. I am a postdoc at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Canada. I am working on a project that is being led by Jane Elliott and Jim Murawski. They are with Environment Canada and Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, respectively. And also working in collaboration with David Lobb and Don Flayton, who are also in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, and Nancy Glosier with Environment Canada in Saskatoon. So, a little bit of background. The Canadian prairies are made up of the southern parts of the three provinces in Western Canada, the prairie provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. And it makes up the northern part of the Great American, northern Great American Plains. Now, in this area, the main hydrological feature of this area is Lake Winnipeg. It is Canada's sixth largest lake, the world's 10th largest freshwater lake. It is approximately 436 kilometers long, about 2.5 to 110 kilometers wide. It is a very important, has a very important freshwater fishery for a very important economic component of Manitoba, and has a large tourist industry with over 10,000 cottages around the lake. And today I'm going to be talking a fair bit about cold climates, snow melt, all of these things, but I did want to put out there that it's not always cold in Canada. We do have some very nice summers, and on a nice day in July, it's an excellent place, Grand Beach, to spend a weekend.
More focus.
Next presentation. Unfortunately, the main issue on Lake Winnipeg right now are the water quality problems. We're having more and more problems with eutrophication. And not only are the problems getting bigger, but the frequency over the last 10 years have really been increasing. And an example was in September of 2006, when the largest algal bloom ever recorded on Lake Winnipeg was recorded. And here you can see the bloom stretching all the way from the North Basin down to the South Basin, so over 400 kilometers. And of course, public concern regarding the quality of surface water in Lake Winnipeg is increasing. And rightly or wrongly so, a lot of this focus and blame is being put towards the agricultural community. So, and the reason for that is because of Lake Winnipeg's watershed. It is about 1 million square kilometers. It encompasses 4 provinces, 4 states, and over 50% of the land is agricultural land with rich natural reserves and nutrients. And so nutrient and water management within this watershed it's going to be key towards Lake Winnipeg's health. And that's where this project comes in. And it's the Watershed Evaluation and Beneficial Management Practices Project. And it is led by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, Environment Canada, with funding from Ducks Unlimited. And it was begun in 2004, and designed to measure at the watershed scale the environmental and economic performance of various agriculture BMPs that are promoted and recommended for farmers in Canada under our National Farm Stewardship Program. And there are 7 Webb's watersheds located across Canada. And the one that I'm focusing on is the one in the province of Manitoba, the South Tobacco Creek. And the reason we're looking at BMPs in this part of the prairies is because much of the previous BMP work that has been conducted, and very good work, not saying anything about the work, but the majority has been collected at plot scales in humid regions. Areas with long, steep slopes, high risk of water erosion, lots of precipitation per year, and generally warm, and most of the runoff occurs as rainfall runoff. However, in Manitoba, the prairie landscape in early spring, waiting for snowmelt, the prairies, they're not always this flat, but in general, it's pretty flat. Low risk of water erosion, it's dry, we generally have less than 500 millimeters of precipitation per year, and it's cold. The majority of runoff occurs as snowmelt over thawing vegetative residues and frozen soils. So what we want to know is, we're recommending these BMPs, how well do they really work in the Canadian prairies? So going back to the South Tobacco Creek watershed is located about 150 kilometers southwest of the city of Winnipeg. It is in the upper reaches of the Red River and the Assiniboine River basins. It has a drainage basin of about 74 square kilometers, and it's primarily agriculture. And then since 1992, it's been monitored for continuous flow and event-based sampling at various locations throughout the watershed. And then the heart of the WEBS program in Manitoba is the Stepler sub-watershed here. And within the Stepler sub-watershed, this is where we're testing 5 different BMPs. So we're looking at forage conversion and the use of small dams and holding ponds and riparian zones. And what I'm going to talk today is the zero conservation tillage versus the conventional tillage site. And this conventional tillage versus zero tillage site, it's a paired watershed study. The two watersheds are side by side. Each field is about 4 to 5 hectares in size. They have a slope, give or take 4 to 5%, so there's a decent slope for the prairies. Between 1993 and 1996, it was run as a calibration period where you had the same conventional tillage practices used on both sides. Then in 1997, the conservation tillage side became the treatment, and so there was no more fall tillage and very little spring tillage. And so right now we have 12 years of hydrological data, including both snowmelt and rainfall-driven runoff events. And so the first thing that we looked at was to just get a general idea of the runoff that was occurring within this field. And you can see pretty quickly the vast majority, over 80% of the overall runoff, was during the snowmelt, and therefore the majority of sediment export and nutrient export occurred during the spring. And the only times we ever saw any differences between the two watersheds in terms of conventional tillage and zero tillage was during the rainfall period. There were no differences during the snowmelt, and as a result, in terms of runoff, there were no real differences between the two tillage treatments on an annual basis. For the sediment and nutrients, the way that we analyzed the data, we used what's recommended, an ANCOVA analysis, which is recommended by the US EPA for paired watershed studies. And again, what you need these two time periods, you need a calibration period, and you need a treatment period, and then you develop regression lines for whatever parameter of interest, sediment, nitrogen, phosphorus. You establish them for both the control period, then you establish again for the treatment period, and then you compare these lines, the regression lines, for differences in slope and y-intercept, and then you can calculate your percent difference due to a change in treatment. And one thing to notice is if the treatment period line moves down, then there's a reduction in export. If it moves up, there's an increase in export. So the first thing to look at was sediment export. And you can see there's a shift down after conversion to zero tillage. There's a significant difference between the slope and the y-intercept, and therefore the treatment period, conservation tillage, calculated that it reduced sediment export by 65%. So it's doing what we expected it to do. And it's also reducing sediment export in both spring snowmelt and summer rainfall periods. And here you can see significant differences in both, but what is interesting to note is how much sediment is actually leaving this watershed. We have less than 100 kilograms of suspended sediment per hectare per year leaving both watersheds. To put that in perspective, this region of Canada, what would be sustainable soil erosion rates would probably be about 5 to 6 tons per hectare per year. So we're really not seeing very much sediment. When we look at nitrogen, again, zero tillage is doing what we expected it to do. Conservation tillage, it reduced nitrogen export by 68%, and it also did a very good job in reducing particulate nitrogen and dissolved nitrogen. And that's important because when we split the data into seasonal patterns and we look at what's happening during snowmelt and rainfall, you can see that over 75% of the overall nitrogen losses were in the dissolved form from both tillage treatments. And again, over 85% of the nitrogen losses occurred during the snowmelt period. And so by reducing that dissolved nitrogen, overall, we're having a very good reduction in total nitrogen. And so conservation tillage is definitely a BMP that we can promote in Western Canada to reduce nitrogen losses from agricultural fields. And we suspect that nitrogen mineralization after fall tillage is probably the key to this relationship, since there are really no real differences in overall runoff. However, things changed when we looked at phosphorus. And in fact, conservation tillage, it actually increased phosphorus export by 12% on an annual basis. Overall, there are no significant differences in the particulate P, but dissolved P increased by 36%. When we split up the data into seasonal patterns, you can see conservation tillage, zero tillage, it did what we expected it to do during rainfall periods. It reduced particulate phosphorus. But since 60 to 80% of the overall phosphorus losses were in the dissolved pea form from both watersheds again, and over 80% of the losses occurred during the snowmelt, any changes in total dissolved phosphorus had a much larger impact on total phosphorus loads in our region than it did in previous studies for more humid regions. And we're seeing similar results when we look at other BMPs that are recommended to reduce soil erosion. Things like riparian zones, permanent cover, forage conversion. They're just not nearly as effective for reducing runoff peat in the Canadian prairies as would be expected based on results done in more humid regions of North America. And one of the main reasons for this is likely because of the release of phosphorus from frozen soil and thawed vegetative residues, especially during the spring snowmelt. Over that winter period when you have freezing and thawing conditions, you have a huge release of dissolved pea, and here you can see that the majority of the soluble reactive pea that we're finding in our water quality samples actually is coming from that frozen litter. So, in summary, conservation tillage BMP, there was no real change in overall runoff. It did a very good job in reducing sediment, nitrogen. However, unfortunately, total phosphorus actually increased on conversion to conservation tillage under our weather conditions. So, in summary, the process in BMPs for controlling nutrient losses from agricultural land in the Canadian prairies, they're still not very well understood. And it is partly because of our cold, dry, flat environments and the high proportion of dissolved nutrients. These transport factors, I think it's fairly safe to say that water erosion is not the main cause of nutrient loss in our region. And so erosion control is not going to be that much help. We are probably going to have to focus more on things like source and loading factors to balance nutrient application with removal and try to increase the efficiency of the nutrients within our systems. But in general, we need to keep working on this, and we need to be able to develop environmentally sound but also economically affordable nutrient water management BMPs that will actually reduce nutrient losses under our cold climatic conditions. So with that, I do want to acknowledge there's a vast amount of people that are working on this project. And so if I have time, I'd be happy to take a question or two. Yeah, but I think the difference is, in that case, there is... See, the phosphorus is coming from both the residue and the soil. And so we saw quite an increase in nitrates after fall tillage, and I think that's what's driving the system when it comes to the release of nitrogen from the conventional tillage side.
Have you looked at the concentration of phosphorus in the upper 2 inches of the soil?
Yeah.
And the conventional as well as both?
Yeah, and that we did. There's a stratification of pea happening underneath the conservation tillage. And so that's something that what this study is the start, or the last slide I showed is the start of another study looking at what really is the relative contribution of the phosphorus loading coming from the residue versus the soil, and is there a difference? Because it really seems that there's a flush of phosphorus from the residue at the beginning of the snowmelt, but then the soil becomes more important as the week progresses, where you have more soluble reactions occurring over the soil. Very good question.
What is the limiting nutrient in the lake water? Is that nitrogen or phosphorus? Because you talk about the eutrophication.
It's a freshwater lake, so it's phosphorus is the main limiting nutrient. But I mean, there's quite a debate going on right now in Western Canada whether everybody is fairly convinced that you need to reduce phosphorus, but do you also need to reduce nitrogen? And I think that's there are various studies that show that by reducing both phosphorus and nitrogen, you will reduce overall eutrophication within fresh waters in this region. But then there are other studies that show by reducing nitrogen and or by just reducing phosphorus, you can become nitrogen limiting. No, sorry. By reducing both phosphorus and nitrogen, you become nitrogen limiting. And so some of the algal blooms, the more toxic algal blooms, may actually flourish under that. So that's still... people are still looking at that.